Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Told you guys I had a surprise for you today, and we are going to delve into it deep today. I told you that we had a guest that was going to be on today who had not just a near-death experience, but he was also going to bring us into the here and now with his own life experiences. And boy, are they unusual and rich life experiences. And tell us a little bit about how to be limitless in this life after you've had that near-death experience. We're going to deal into what, and he doesn't even like to call it a near-death experience. We'll find out what he calls that experience today, and we'll talk about what it's like to have that near-death experience. We'll talk about what it's like in his experience to have, he doesn't even like to call it a psychic medium. It's something else. This man is not your typical psychic medium, folks. He's not your typical psychic at all. We're going to throw all the terms out the window here, and we're going to redefine these borders that we put ourselves behind when it comes to the metaphysical and the psychic. Ray Catania is our guest today. And he is an author, he's a metaphysical teacher, he's a theorist and a coach. He is a survivor of a near-death experience that we'll talk about today that will curl your hair. I mean, he's been through some stuff, folks. With that, I'm going to throw a little bit of a trigger warning. If you're a little squeamish about swear words, cuss words, we're going to let a few fly today because this guy's been through the ringer, and I think he's deserved a few. I deserved a few too. So between us, we may throw a few out there because he's been through some stuff. So I'm allowing him to swear. I'm going to swear a few times because some of the stuff I've read in his book, I'd swear if I've been through some of the stuff he's been through. So we're going to let Ray let a few fly. I'm going to let a few fly. Because when we describe what he's been through, you may let a few fly hearing it. Ray's unique approach to everything combines scientific theories, which I love, with his own life experiences to reveal how anyone can harness the power of the mind and create their own reality and become limitless and be limitless. And Ray has dedicated his life to helping others achieve their full potential after surviving that near-death experience. He's got two captivating books out there in his Awakening series. The one that I read before this interview is The Atheist in the Afterlife. And he has another one out there called You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. His profound insights and intuitive abilities have made him a sought-after practitioner in scientific spiritualism and the practical applications of metaphysics. With a thriving private practice, he guides individuals on their transformative journeys. Let's bring him in now to Darkness Radio. Let's bring in Ray Catania. Ray, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, Tim. Thank you so much for that introduction. I promise to limit my swear words. You have my word. I'll do my best.
I don't know, my friend. When we start talking about some of the things you've been through, I may let a few fly. I'm just saying. You've been through it. We'll get to it here soon enough. I do want to talk a little bit about your upbringing because, you know, as we go through your upbringing in your book, The Atheist in the Afterlife. You know, I relate to your upbringing. I really do. And I could feel the loneliness through the page. And you know, I'll let you describe a little bit about your upbringing. Tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up, Roy.
Sure. As you read, it wasn't exactly a pleasant environment that one would want to grow up in, but I didn't know the difference, right? I was just a kid. There was a lot of drama and trauma and turmoil and always money problems and a lot of fighting. And I guess to stay out of it as a young boy, you know, and when I say young, 5, 6, 7 years of age, I would, you know, try to isolate myself. So when the fighting began, I wouldn't be a part of it because if I was there, then I'm going to be a part of it. I'm going to be involved, right? So to protect myself, I would hide in a closet, under the bed, in a basement, in the backyard, you know, whatever I could do to stay clear of what was happening. And, you know, in those days, we didn't yet have cell phones or PCs or laptops or anything like that. So it's just me and me by myself. Mm-hmm. And when you isolate, it's like a form of meditation, right? Because you're completely isolating and you're just going inward for your own, I guess, entertainment or imagination, which is what I thought it was, really. But, you know, when you stare at a wall and you do this day after day after day, it was literally, you know, after dinner time until about 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, there I was, just me. And eventually you can start to see things that we would not normally see, or things that we take for granted. A wall is not just a wall and paint on it. You know, you take away the colors, take away the wood, take away everything. And what you begin to see is energy. You can see what the wall is made out of in its purest form and its purest sense. And so I started to develop like a bond with energy, the ability to see it, feel it. I thought it was really cool. It entertained me. Mm-hmm. Didn't think anything of it. And then, you know, there were even some occasions where some of these energies were like my imaginary friends. I could kind of talk to them and they could talk to me. And, you know, we had not really talking, but, you know, it's this kind of communication. And again, I thought nothing of it because when you're a kid, you have no preconceived notions of what's real and what's not. But of course, when it leaked out, to my parents that, you know, I had these friends and coming from a Christian home, this was really forbidden territory, right? This was damning. This was horrible. So, you know, the one time when it came out, I never spoke of it again. I was told it's not real. You're crazy. Never say that to anybody, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I just shut that stuff down and, kept it to myself. And, you know, but that's part of my childhood. And what happens is whatever we kind of get out of our childhood, especially between the ages of like 2 to 7, we're in what our brain waves are in a theta state, and that's very close to a hypnotic state. So a hypnotist would put you there to help you quit smoking or something like that. And what that is a survival technique, primitively, so that we know what's happening around us. Mm-hmm. We absorb everything that's happening around us, and it helped us to survive. And when you absorb everything around you today, you have television and you have, you know, like I had an unhappy home and the neighborhood wasn't great either. And the school wasn't great. So it was like the things that I'm absorbing are negative, 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 right? It's all fight, 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 and so on and so forth. So chaos became my comfort zone. Like as I got into my teens and I approached my 20s, if things weren't chaotic, I didn't know how to navigate them.
Yeah.
I was lost. So I would either create the chaos or I would find chaos and dip right into it because I could navigate that. I understood that. And it was a very dysfunctional way to be, but I didn't know any better, right? So we take that with us. And being that way, I also rejected Christianity, and I probably would have rejected any religion that my parents had just because they were my parents and it was theirs, right? Mm-hmm. But it was Christianity, and I did reject it, and I went to the extreme far side away from that and went to atheism, which is why the book is The Atheist in the Afterlife. So now I'm an atheist, so-called, I believe in nothing, and I have come from a chaotic home, and I'm putting myself in terrible situations where I could die easily. And then at the age of 20, I really did die. And the reason I don't like to call it a near-death experience is because it's very real. I mean, you really do die. All the things that happened to me or any physical body when it dies happened to me. But Raymond Moody coined the term near-death experience, nonetheless. So, you know, we use that.
Yeah.
And I was 20 years old, and I was sleeping in my bed, which was above the kitchen. And the kitchen obviously had a stove, and the stove ran on natural gas. And while I was sleeping throughout the night, the gas from the stove was rising up into my room, and I was breathing it in. And no one really acknowledged this or noticed it. And the next morning, my mother got up and she turned the stove on, and there was a big ball of fire, and it caught the wall on fire, and there was smoke. But it wasn't the fire or the smoke that created any danger for me. It was the gas I was inhaling. So the way I understand the story, my father put the fire out with an extinguisher relatively quickly. But I still was breathing in this gas. So I hear the sirens, I hear the fire trucks, I hear all this commotion downstairs, and I try to get out of bed. And I find that I really, like, certain parts of my body are just not moving. Like, I'm telling them to move, but they're not moving.
Yeah.
My legs just felt like they were 1,000 pounds, and my head, I couldn't get it off the pillow. I tried to yell, but I couldn't. So I tried to pull myself to the edge of the bed. I would pull myself a couple inches, and then I would fall down, and I'd pull a little bit more, and I'd fall down. And the noises downstairs kept me awake and kept me going, thank God, because I knew if I didn't get to the edge of the bed, I was dead. Mm-hmm. That much I knew for a fact. So I did make it to the edge of the bed, and I gave myself like one last, like, really good pull, and I fell out, and I came face first down onto the ground. Right. And that created a thump that everybody heard downstairs and went, oh shit, Ray's upstairs. We got to, you know, and then they came running up. But here's the funny thing. By the time they got there, I hit the floor. Normally that would hurt, right?
Yeah.
I hit the floor and I knew that I hit it, but there was no pain at all. And that's because that was the moment I was dead. That was the moment I was out of the body. It's almost like you get pulled out of the body right before that pain is about to kick in. And at least I've heard this before from others. And that's the way I experienced it also. So I was above my body, and the room that I was in was exactly a square. And I am in a corner, like a neutral corner, looking down at my dead body. And I'm just energy. And there's this amazing light. I mean, amazing white light, just like you've heard about. And it's adjacent to me in the adjacent corner. And it's directly on me, like a spotlight. It's not on my dead body. It's on me, the energy that I am now. And I am commingled with this light. And I'm one with this light.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling is unbelievably euphoric. It's just the best feeling I've ever experienced. And God knows I did a lot of drugs in my life, mm-hmm. but there was nothing better than this feeling. And the more I went into the light, I felt it more so. So it would increase, the euphoria would increase. And there was a being at the end of the light that was saying, it's okay, Ray, it's safe to come into the light. I don't know who that was. I refer to him or her as the being, and he will come up again. I'll just say he.
Sure.
I wanted to go in. I wanted to go all the way across. It's like a tunnel, and I wanted to go all the way across to the other side. But what happened was, is my father kicked in the door to come and grab me, and he scooped me up, and he was screaming, and he was crying, and he was distraught, and he was yelling for the paramedics, you got to get up here, my son, and he's screaming. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, this man loves me. And I didn't know that. Honestly, I never felt that before. Like he's got me in his arms, and he's crying his eyes out. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, that's what I always wanted.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Was that feeling. So I asked the being at the end of the light if I could go back. And I was like, kind of like negotiating, if you will. I was saying, you know, I don't think I can leave him like that. You know, I made it about him. Like, you know, he's, you know, really taking this hard that I'm dying. But the bottom line was, I did come back. I was no longer in that room when I woke up. I was on the living room floor and on my back, and the paramedics have all their tools out and they're working on me and, you know, just very diligently doing their thing, and saying, we got to get him in. Let's bring up the truck, meaning the ambulance. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, I feel great. And they're like, you're not great. And I'm like, no, I feel fantastic. Like, I've never felt better. The euphoria is still in me. And I'm trying to explain to them, I just want to get up. And they're like, you're not going, you have no blood pressure. You're going in the truck and we're going to the hospital. And I'm like, but did you hear the voice? Did you see the light? I mean, didn't you see that? And now they're looking at each other like, I got three heads. I'm crazy. And I'm going to wind up going to the wrong hospital and never coming out. So I just shut up. I just stopped talking and I let them do their thing. And they took me to the hospital and stayed overnight, came back the next day. And, you know, once that euphoria wears off from the near death, oh my God, does the pain set in?
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Every nook and cranny of my body, like every little ache and pain that you have, when you're energetic, you feel nothing because you have no body. You're completely free. So even an injury, like an old sports injury from 10 years ago, all of a sudden is like, bam. And it's like a bomb goes off. And I was like, Jesus, I made the wrong decision. I want to get back. I want a do-over, man. I want to go back to the light. Fuck this. I'm going back to the light. And I never got the love from my father, and nothing ever changed, and everything just went back to normal. And I was like, this completely sucks. And I made the wrong choice. But you know, and when I tried to express what had happened, I was told it never happened. Right. My mother went to the far extreme, like it never happened. None of this happened. And I was, you know, because, and I get it today. All right. Because if your kid died on your watch, you know, you go through a period of denial.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So she turned the story into something much lighter. And it wasn't until the book was released that we actually had a conversation. When she was released, I think she was 81 or 82 years old. And we actually talked about it. And she's like, you didn't just die once. It was like three times. They had to keep resuscitating you.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
there was more to the story that I didn't even know because I was gone.
Wow.
But it took that long for her to come to terms with it. And she's like, you must hate me. I said, I don't hate you. I fully understand it. And you know, and we'll get into more of that stuff later.
Sure.
But yeah, there was no hate. But now I'm in my 20s and I'm a guy who I don't care if I live or die. I got no reason to live anyway. I have no kids. There's really nothing, no purpose. Had this chaotic lifestyle, don't care who I work for, what I do. So, you know, I'm in bad situations, working with bad people, doing bad things, you know, and in the times of trouble, when I was always faced with my own mortality, my own death, like one time you probably read about the shootout that was in the bar and
yeah.
I was trying to hide under the bar.
Well, let me before we get to that, Ray, I want to backtrack just a little bit first.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about you were talking about that isolation when you were young, and there's one particular incident in school I want to talk about real quick before we get to your 20s. But I also want to bring up the fact you talk about when you were isolated and you were young, you talk about being a sports fan. You open up the book talking about how you're at a Yankees game.
Yeah.
And you talk about how sports and losing yourself in the Yankees a little bit was a little bit of a salvation. Yeah. I relate to it because, and I'm only going to bring back to me just for a second here. I related to you reading that because when I was young, I was a North Stars fan, hockey fan. And I remember, and you were talking about how sometimes you'd isolate yourself, maybe even in the backyard throwing a ball or whatever. I would sit and I would shoot, I would take a little miniature golf club and shoot a little wiffle golf ball into the crawl space and pretend I was playing hockey while I was listening to Al Shaver call North Star games. And it's that loneliness you talk about, but you're also talking about these friends of yours. And I remember that too. So I'm vibing on the same level that you're on. And I remember that exact same scenario. So yeah. I get that. So I wanted to share that with you. On the other thing I wanted to talk to you about on that childlike level, before we get to that experience in your 20s, there's an instance in the book where you talk about harnessing power. And the first power we harness when we're kids is anger or rage. And the first power you realize that you can harness is anger or rage. I want you to tell people the first time you realized you could harness anger or rage in what you did in school with a colored pencil. Now, this is not indicative of your character now, but it was just powerful. The thing you realized that you could do
fear and power.
Fear and power.
Because, as a kid, that's what I learned. That's what I was shown. My father grew up in a very bad neighborhood. And used to have to fight his way to school every day. I mean, there wasn't a day that he got out of his house and he didn't have to literally get into a fight to get to school. So, there was that rage that was in my household. There was that anger and there was that don't fuck with me type, mentality. Mm-hmm. And, I think I was in the fourth grade, if I remember correctly. And, we were coloring and we had to do an arts and crafts project. And my friend sat next to me, who I considered to be my best friend. Mm-hmm. And he took my blue crayon and started to color with my blue crayon. And I said, don't take my blue crayon. And he put it back. And then he took it again. And I said, don't take my blue crayon. And he did it again. And he did it again. And now I'm getting really angry. And I'm like, this guy is not listening to me. So I get up out of my chair and I walk over to the pencil sharpener, because in those days you had one pencil sharpener for the whole class. And I took my pencil and I'm just thinking, as I'm turning and I'm sharpening the pencil, my mind is thinking, what am I going to do to this guy to make him realize, oh, I got it. And I went back to the table and I, just like a predator, I just stayed there and waited, saw my blue crayon, waited for him to pick it up. I had a pencil that was so sharp, it could have cut anything, because I was just there sharpening it up. And then he goes for the crayon and I stabbed him right in the fucking arm and blood was everywhere. And he's looking at his arm and the teacher comes over and she's white as a ghost. What did you do? I said, he took my crayon. I stabbed him. Like nothing, don't take my crayon.
Right. Yeah.
And I got sent to the principal's office and I was kind of scared because I didn't really know what was going to happen next. And I'm like, oh my God, my parents are going to come and this and that. My mother comes in. And I hear them yell. She's in the principal's office. I'm outside. I can hear them yelling, but I don't know what they're saying until she opens the door. And the last thing she says as she's coming out is, why the fuck did that kid steal his blue crayon anyway? Now, I got my ass kicked when I got home. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
But the mentality was, you don't mess with my kid. I'll mess with my kid. I'll teach him. And
right,
you tell him he can't stab anybody because they're stealing his shit,
so right.
That was my how. Don't take our shit, you're gonna get cut.
That's right,
where I came from, I'm not proud of that story, but
that shows, I think that accurately shows people in the book that where you came from and where you got to. I mean, it's a very good example of what you fought through in order to get to where you are now. So just to kind of set people up to give them an idea of what you're coming through. Now, let's go to your 20s to give them an even better idea of what you are going through in order to get to where you are now. Set this up for us.
So, this story, I worked for some shady people, they owned businesses. They would run these businesses, and I would work in the businesses, not directly part of their thing that they were doing, but just working in the businesses. Now, when there were problems, quote unquote, between two rival organizations, shall we say, the problems sometimes took place right in front of me. And in one of those cases, it was after work and everybody was out of the bar, and it was just a few guys that I had never noticed before. And of course, the boss, and one of the guys comes up and he says, give me Johnny on the rocks. And I went back to get the bottle of Johnny Walker, and I got the red bottle, and I went to pour it, and he goes, don't give me that shit. Give me the black. And I was like, okay. So I went back and I look at my boss for the nod, because if I don't get the nod, I can't serve him black.
Yeah.
And if this guy knew what he was wanted, he should have ordered blue anyway, but went for the black. So I bend down to the cabinet and to get the black, and I hear pop, 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 pop. And I know these are not firecrackers. I know I've heard this sound before. And now under, hiding with nothing but two bottles in my hand, that's it, a bottle of red and a bottle of black, Johnny Walker, and I'm behind the bar going, how the hell am I going to get out of this? And the being, that same being, comes and says, side door. And I was thinking, I can't do the side. I can't get to the side door. The shooter is going to see me if I try to get to the side door. So in that moment, I just had the pops continued, and I had to make a move. So I had nothing to lose. So I just got up with the two bottles in my hand. And there's a point there that I black out, and I don't really remember exactly what happens in those seconds, but I do get to that side door, and I get out the side door, and I run down the corridor. And then I had to go about 40 feet down that corridor to get to another side door to get out that door. And my car was right there. And the irony about that, I never parked there, ever. I had a parking space, and it was on the other side of the building, but I didn't use it that day. I was parked right outside that side door. And I got into my car and I just drove. And, I just remember I couldn't get the keys in the ignition. I dropped them like three times. I was shaking, I was trembling, but eventually, I got out of there. But the point is there's that being again. And why is he looking out for me? Like, I don't deserve him.
Wow.
But he's very persistent. And it's not like one or two brushes with death. I've had like 9 or 10 car accidents and near drowning experiences. And I was beaten to within inches of my life. Always, he's there and he tells me how to get out of it. And that's the amazing part of it.
Well, I'll share. Let's take our break here. When we come back, Ray, I want to talk about the one accident that it absolutely will curl people's hair. The one car accident that's in the book that's absolutely going to astound people. I don't know how you lived through this thing, because I much less came away from it the way you came away from it, because the way it sounds, you should be paralyzed. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll talk about that. And also when we come back, we'll talk about the love of Ray's life. There's such a thing as, I believe, as not just destiny, but people being put in your life for a reason. We talk about soul groups. We talk about people being in your soul family. We talk about maybe even if you believe in reincarnation, if you believe in having been with somebody in past lives. You may even believe that the love of Ray's life has been in his life before, even reading this book that I read previous to this interview, The Atheist in the Afterlife. You may believe that the love of Ray's life has been in his life before once you've read this book. We'll talk about the love of Ray's life, Jessica. We'll talk about Jessica when we come back and the unusual circumstances in which he met her. We'll talk about Jessica when we come back on the second half of Darkness Radio. Again, two books out there, The Atheist and The Afterlife, and You Are Still Alive. Now act like it. When we come back, more unusual circumstances and how these psychic powers develop with Ray, and how does an atheist overcome the fact that he's developing into a psychic? We'll talk about that with Ray Catania, our guest, right here on the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is the author of The Atheist in the Afterlife, and You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. Ray Catania is our guest. You may call him a psychic medium. Ray, what do you call yourself?
Oh my God, nobody.
Nobody?
Absolutely nobody.
No?
You know, Ram Dass wrote a book called Becoming Nobody, and I never understood it completely, but now I completely get it. The less and less and less I become, and the closer I become to being nobody, the more I am one with everybody.
Okay.
And that is unbelievable. But your question is, you know, the word psychic has this connotation of fraudulent behaviors. And, you know, I just really don't like the term. And also, everyone has their sixth sense. It's built into your consciousness. We all have it. It's just some of us aren't forced to use it the way I was, or they don't want to use it, or they just disregard it. But I can give you instance after instance of times when you've used it or it's occurred right in front of you. I'll give you a quick one. How many times have you thought of somebody and then the phone rings and that's the person on the phone?
A lot. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a telepathic communication between you and the other person that you receive before the phone rings. So we have this ability. We all do. Okay. So I prefer, I guess, intuitive is a little better word, you know, than psychic, I guess.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair enough. Before the break, we were talking about some of these, we'll just call them jams, we'll put it that way, that you've been in from time to time, extreme jams. One of the ones that absolutely, if I had hair, Ray, would have curled my hair, maybe they curl my beard hair, is this car accident that you get into. And you talk about manifestation. You talk about things that you can manifest upon yourself, whether it is positive or negative. And you kind of give that warning, be careful what you wish for, or be careful what you put out there into the universe. And you're on your way to work, and it's a job that you don't necessarily want to go to because you're being harassed. You're being harassed by a superior. Finish that story for our audience and what it is you're going through and why you don't want to go to work and what happens as a result.
You know, that was a very strange situation. I was working for older female boss, and I was very young at the time, and you know, she was just relentless, you know, setting up situations where we'd be in the same hotel room and things, just whatever she could possibly do too. And it was just, it was disgusting. And you know, people, you think like, oh, because you're a guy and you're in this situation, yeah, you know, way to go, bro. It's not, it fucking sucks. I don't care, male or female, it's not right. Anyway, I didn't want to go to this thing anymore. I just, you know, and one day I'm driving to work, and actually let's go back before that day. I run into a friend of mine, and he's spending money like it's water. And I asked him, I said, well, where did you get all this money? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I had a car accident and I sued the other driver and I got tons of money and now I'm doing great. And I started my own business and I have this and I have that. And a light bulb went off in my head. And I said, well, wow, wouldn't that be great if I could have a car accident and sue somebody and take a bunch of money and not be all that debilitated? I can handle it, right? So the wheels are turning and I'm thinking about this, like really thinking about this. How can I have this car accident and, you know, sue everybody and make a bunch of money so I don't have to go to this damn job anymore. And I'm literally driving to the job and it's raining out. And the guy next to me starts to, he's in the right lane, I'm in the middle lane, and he starts to cut over into my lane without looking at all. Now, this doesn't cause the accident right away because he goes back into his lane. And me being the asshole that I was, I had to pull up alongside of him and tell him everything that I thought about him as a person and a driver. Mm-hmm. And I had to call him and swear at him and call him every name in the book. What I stopped paying attention to is what's right in front of me. Traffic came to a dead stop and we were on a highway with either a 55 or a 65 mile an hour speed limit.
Yeah.
And I just drove right into the back of the car that was in front of me. And the car behind me hits me. And now I'm thinking this is the, everything slows down in those moments. It's like a second, all of a sudden feels like a minute.
Yeah.
Right. And I put my head, I put my arms over my head and I hear, get under the dash, under the dash. I did not have a seatbelt on because it was not by law at that time. You did not have to have your seatbelt on back then. And he's saying, under the dash, under the dash. So I squeeze down under the dash and the hits just keep coming. So the next car hits that car, which hits me again. And then I'm in the left lane. I don't realize I'm in the left lane. And then I get struck again in the left lane. And then another car hits that car, which hits me again. And I'm just under the dashboard going, please make it stop. Please make it stop. Please make it. And the hits just keep coming and coming and coming. The pile up was tremendous. So eventually, when I came to, my car was faced the wrong way on the highway, half on the divider and half off the divider. Like my wheels were on top of the divider. I don't know how that even happened. The top of the car was just crushed down and there was really nothing left of the car. And the police officer came, and I remember it was a woman police officer, and there was a bystander who came to help me on my right side. And the woman, the police officer on the left side, and she asked him, she goes, is he with us? And obviously she was saying, is he dead? Because she didn't want to say, is he dead? I'm like there, I'm just unconscious kind of, and I'm coming in and out. And I raised my finger like this. I just kind of like wiggled my finger to make sure they knew I was alive because I thought they were just, I don't know what I thought.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So they cut me out and they bring me into the hospital and strap me up into traction for hours and hours and hours. And I don't even know how long I was in there, and it was a nightmare. But the thing is that I wound up suing all the cars that hit me, even though I hit the first one. So what they do is a deduction for the one that you hit, and you get the rest of everybody else hitting you. Now, do not try this at home. Ever. Okay. First of all, this is over 30 years ago.
Right.
Will not get a lot of money if you have an accident today. Those days are gone.
Yes.
Where you sue somebody. We have verbal threshold and all this other stuff. You're not going to get any money. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
But I did achieve the outcome that I was looking for. I got hurt, make no mistake about it, but I didn't die and I was able to walk away from it and, you know, eventually be in pretty good shape. I would give the money back tomorrow if I could undo what I did, but I can't. The point of the story is you can manifest anything. I could have manifested money in a good way, but instead I manifested it in a negative way, thinking, oh, if I could do this negative thing, I could get money. And sure enough, the negative thing occurred and the money came exactly the way I said it would. So you can make anything happen using your sixth sense, using your consciousness. It is the law of attraction. You put it out, it's coming back if you say it in a certain way. And that's what I did. And I was successful in a very ugly way.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugly, painful, destructive, just in a way that I don't think. Yeah. And in a way where, and you know, you put it also brilliantly in the book, you have to make epic mistakes in order to really learn, and in order to be successful, you have to make epic mistakes, I think. You know, no one goes about life and easily goes through life and achieves big successes without having failures.
Yeah, that's right. And everybody, you learn more failures than your successes. I've learned when things are just given to you or they come to you very easily, what do we learn? Nothing. But when you go through trials, tribulations, and struggles, in every trauma, there's a takeaway, there's a life lesson in there that you're going to need for the rest of your life. And people say, why does this happen to me? That's why. You need to look for the lesson in the trauma and take it out.
Yeah.
Because that's what you needed to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. So the good side of this now, we're going to move into some good territory here now, Ray. Let's talk about the good parts of, and you believe in karma, which I like. I like the fact that even though you've got a scientific base to your yourself through atheism, you do believe in science, or your former, I take it it's former now, former belief in atheism, there's a good side or a good flip side to this coin in that things are starting to slowly turn to the good side and that you're starting to manifest some good in your life. I want to talk about the love of your life here and that in your quest to find good things in your life after so many bad things have happened to you up to a certain point in your 20s, you decide, you know what? I need to look for someone in my life. Tell people how it is you run across Jessica.
Okay. So, I had been married previously and I had two children. And I was probably 30, 32, something like that. That marriage fell apart pretty quickly. But the children of my own gave me meaning for living. Right. So at that point, I made a decision that I was going to turn my life around completely. Mm-hmm. I went back to college, got my degree. I went into rehab for drugs and alcohol, clean and sober since then. Absolutely did everything that I could do on a positive path to give my kids everything that I didn't have. I didn't have a huge spiritual awakening yet, but what I did have was I was a good father. I went to parent teacher conferences. I took them to their games and, you know, I tied their shoelaces and I wiped their asses and I did everything that a father should do. Right.
Yep.
I was not going to let them down. No matter how much, whatever I had to do to change myself, I did it. And then the marriage fell apart and I didn't date for a very long time, but eventually they got older and I thought they could handle me bringing someone else if I met somebody else. Right. And so I decided to go online because now that's how we find people, right? We go join a website or whatever. And so I was looking at the different sites, trying to decide which one I was going to join. And if you've ever seen one of these sites, they usually give you four women that are in your immediate area to try to entice you to get you to join, right?
Sure.
So one of the four that they showed me on the advertisement was my wife. And I knew that was my wife. There was no question about it. I looked at her. It was like I knew her. She is my wife. So I joined the site and I spend the money and I send one email to her. That's it. One email. And I tell her, this is the only email that I'm going to send. It's to you. And it's because you're my wife and you just don't know this yet. By the way, my name is Ray. And, you know, I did a lot funnier than that. I actually copied and pasted it and put it in the book and her response is too.
And it is classic. It's a classic response. Yeah.
I tried to be clever with it. And, you know, so she did respond and she is my wife and we are married and we are together today. And she is a spiritual person, but I did not know that when we met. You know, when we started to get serious, in fact, she said, what are your spiritual beliefs? And I was like, oh, shit. what are yours? And I was just going to go along with whatever she said. You know, right. She's a Jewish Catholic, whatever. Yeah, me too. Me too. That's me. You know, but she was smarter than that. She held back. And so things as they progressed with her, there was a, you know, a time when I knew I had these abilities where I told you earlier that I could see energy, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was living single, these energies would visit me and keep me up all night. And, you know, it started to get really bad. Like I thought I was losing my mind. And, but I always hid it. I always kept it hidden because, you know, you can't tell anybody because you're crazy and there was no light and there was no voice and there are no energies. And when you're dead, you're dead. And that's that, you know. So I never mention it. But when we meet and we start dating, she asks me this question and she says to me, I think you need a spiritual clearing. And I'm like, oh, like a massage? And she's like, nah, not at all. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's great, hon. Will we have cake? And she's like, yeah, we'll have cake. She goes, you don't even have to be there for the clearing. I was like, really? This is weird. I don't know any of these terms. I don't know anything about anything. I'm just, you know, going about my atheist ways, but I'm just trying to be a good dad and meeting her. And she orders this clearing. The woman calls me on the phone. She's an energy healer. And she explains to me what she's going to do, what time she's going to do it. And she says, whatever you do, don't have any appointments on this day. Maybe even the next 2 days. And I was like, well, I could do today. She goes, all right, good enough. I'll let you know when I'm done. And she comes back and she tells me all these things, like cleared this chakra, that chakra, this, that, and the other thing. And I saw this and I saw that. And I was like, okay, that's great. Believing in none of this, just being polite and saying thank you very much. And I hang up the phone. Well, strange things start happening. The first of them is I feel wobbly, like my equilibrium was off. That was the first thing I felt. That followed by a headache. And then I was just really, my stomach started to turn and I just thought I was getting sick. I'm like, I got to go home. So I took the rest of the day off, and that was a Friday. And Saturday, now here is, well, I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday morning, the first time I see him, but this is the first time that I don't see energy as lines. Uh-huh. I see him as a person. Uh-huh. And he's talking to me and he says, I fucked up. I made a mistake. You can help her. I cannot. First time, I just think it's my imagination. It's nothing. I'm not seeing with my eyes. It's like a movie screen opens up inside my mind and I can see the movie screen. And on the movie screen is this man. He's a husky guy with a beard and a mustache and thick black hair. And he just says the same line over and over. Now, after the first time I ignore it, the second time I ignore it, the third time I try to ignore it, now I'm like, why is this happening? Like, I can't turn this off. I go to sleep, I wake up the next day, and now it's happening like every hour on the hour. There he is again in my face, telling me the same damn thing again. I fucked up, I made a mistake, you can help her, I cannot. I don't know who this man is. Yeah. I have never seen him before. I don't know what he's talking about and who can be helped. I don't know anything. All I know is I'm losing my freaking mind.
Right, right.
I need to get help.
Yeah.
And it's really, really bad. On the third day, it was like every 5 minutes, I couldn't drive. I couldn't carry a conversation. I would lose track of everything and anything I was doing. If I was at work, I would have probably lost my job, but it was a weekend. And the breaking point, I was in a store and I was paying for my merchandise. And I don't know what I did, but I must have paused or said something. Maybe I yelled at the guy. I don't know. But the woman behind the counter stops and she goes, sir, are you all right? And I said, no, I don't know what I am, but I'm not all right. And I took my car and I went back to the car and I just kind of sat there and I thought about this. And I said, I'm crazy. I'm insane. Let me use the right terminology. Yeah. I'm insane. I need to prepare for my death, prepare for my children's well-being. I knew I had drafted a will. I needed to make sure my brother had my will and my DNR and my, power of attorney, which I had given to him a long time ago when I didn't, you know, really care if I lived or died. So he had all that stuff and I just wanted to make sure it was in order. And I'm thinking about, this is the end of my life. How am I going to tell anybody? And if I also have to tell this woman I love, who I know is going to be my wife, we're not married yet, we're just dating, it's only like a couple of months in, and I'm going to tell her, honey, I see people that aren't really there, you know, it's not going to go over well, to say the least. Now, to top all of this off, she is a doctor of psychology and neuropsychology, pediatric to be exact. So I'm going to take this to a doctor of psychology who I love with, honey, I see dead people. How's the salmon? She's going to hit me with a bottle and walk out the room. So,
or she's going to commit you. Yeah.
Or commit me. Right. So yeah. This is what I was really thinking. In all honesty and all fooling aside, I figured she was going to give me the name of a doctor and be like, call this guy. He can help you. Don't call me ever again.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened at all. No. I told her what I saw and how I saw it. Black hair, beard, mustache, husky guy. This is what he says. I don't know why. And it just keeps happening. And I don't know what to do with it. And she says, oh my God, that sounds like my dad. And I was like, what? I was like, honey, your dad's dead. You told me he was dead. She's like, he is. And I'm like, oh, okay, you're crazy. I'm getting out of here. Check, please. I'm going. All right. You need help. And, you know, but it was a completely different reaction than what I thought. And I said, but wait, okay, let's analyze this, because I have to analyze this. I am an analyzer. This is what I do. My brain kicks in and I'm like, okay, the picture that I saw of your dad looks nothing like the guy that I'm seeing. Like I said, this guy's big, stocky, beard, mustache, and thick black hair. And she's like, well, the picture that you saw was very, very old. Let me show you what he looked like before he died. And she goes through the phone and finds a photo. And she shows it to me, and my heart stops. And I said, you know that guy? And she goes, that's my dad, silly. She goes on to tell me she's been to mediums many times and he comes through very powerful, just like you're saying, like on the movie screen. And he's like, kind of like right here. And I'm like, hun, what the fuck is a medium? I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, insanity, I understand. I get that.
Yeah.
I don't understand medium things. I have no idea what you're talking about. And she says, explains it a little bit more and kind of, she's like, relax. She's a psychologist. She knows how to handle this.
Yeah.
She's talking me down. Right.
Yeah.
So, she's like, there's a medium that's going to come to our area. And I wanted to go visit with her to see if my dad was going to come through. So you visit with her, I'll come and you guys can talk shop and we can figure out what's happening. Does that sound like a good idea? And I said, that sounds like a great idea. So I was so lucky to find someone who was open to the possibility of what was happening to me. And that was miraculous in it of itself. So I meet with the medium and I explain to her what happens. I feel the vibrations first. This happens second, this third. Sometimes I see the lines flashing around and I just know somebody's in the room. And then if I tune in, the movie screen opens. Stop, she says. I said, okay. She said, that's exactly the way I see it. And I said, see what? She goes, dead people. And I was like, nah. I said, are you kidding me? She's like, no. And there was a big feeling of relief in that moment that I wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
But also an anxiety of what am I? Because I don't understand what I am. And I don't understand what are my responsibilities? What am I supposed to do with this? What are my obligations? Am I a freak? Like what am I? And luckily she took me under her wing and I became her mentee for the first year. And she really saved my life because she taught me how to turn it on and off, which was the hardest thing, the most important thing to learn, because it will drive you crazy. If you don't have a mentor and you think you're seeing people, you need to get a mentor because you need to learn how to turn it off, because it can drive you crazy. So she not only taught me that, she taught me the different types of premonitions that I was getting, how to, what they were, how to deal with them, and she said, how did you feel, by the way, after you gave your wife the message? And I said, great. She goes, exactly. All you had to do is deliver the message and the guy wouldn't have haunted you for 3 days. And I was like, oh, that's how that works. Because the second I told her, it was gone. He was gone.
Yeah.
And so I started to learn how to navigate this, and I'm coming to terms with the reality. Now I'm dropping atheism. I'm in a good place. I'm in love. I've got two beautiful children. I got a great job. Everything's starting to go in the right direction. I just don't fully understand what the hell I am, but I'm in a pretty good place overall.
Yeah.
And that's the story of how I met my wife.
That's amazing. I mean, it's not how we typically meet most people, but it's amazing. I mean, nonetheless. But, you know, what's, I think, the most amazing about it, Ray, is most people would have been turned into a puddle when they realize that not only are they having to, you know, develop this burgeoning relationship and getting to know this other person, but then also having to redefine themselves and then having to share that new person with this other person and hoping that this other person will accept that new thing that's outside the fringe of society.
Yeah.
You know,
all the time, I'm given a challenge, and now in hindsight, I get it. We're given these things to overcome them. And, you know, nobody wants to be faced with challenges that are, you know, very difficult, but at the same time, they are going to come. So why not just kick back and say, this is what it is. I'm going to deal with it. I've got this. And just become aware of the situation and don't become the situation. And that's where I am today. That's what I understand now.
Yeah.
I don't get angry. I experience anger, mm-hmm. but I'm not angry. Defining myself as anger. No. I experience it and it dissipates very quickly. I experience sadness and it dissipates quickly. And that's after the spiritual awakening, which hasn't happened in this story yet, but we're getting there.
Right. And yeah, we'll get there here in a moment. I'm trying to think of how I want to transition into that, because I guess the way I want to kind of cap this off is that you've really met the person you're supposed to meet.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I wanted to ask you, and the one thing that I want to kind of get your perspective on is, do you believe in past lives? And do you believe that you and Jessica have done this dance before, that you and she have been together before?
Yeah, I do now. I didn't. I struggled with that for a very long time. Reincarnation was something I had struggled with. But something that the Buddha said really, really stuck with me. When he was on his deathbed, he said it was his seventh life. And when he died, he was not going to return. And he told his disciples to please take my teachings out there to the world, because I won't be returning this time. And it wasn't because of the number seven. It was because he became enlightened on this earth. And when we become enlightened on this earth, we're not going to return. And that's what I believe today. And I can't prove that by any scientific means. This is just my hypothesis of what I think happens. We did a past life regression, my wife and I, and we did it with a group of people. My mentor was the one that was running the group.
Mm-hmm.
We all came to, she said, does anybody want to share? And my wife immediately raised her hand. She's not one for talking in public. So I was kind of shocked that she raised her hand. And she starts to tell a story about how she's in ancient Greece and she's the daughter of a wealthy guy who, and she always likes to run off and watch the little village that's down below their land. And she sits under the tree and she watches the village, and she would get in trouble sometimes because she wasn't supposed to leave by herself. Her father was very protective and so and so. And she said, one day I was sitting under the tree and I saw the chariots coming through, and it was like they were preparing for this big event. And here comes these chariots with these soldiers were on the chariots and the beautiful horses. And there must have been somebody really important on that, on one of those chariots. I knew the love of my life was on one of those chariots. And then I looked at her and my jaw, I was not going to go. I was not going to say what I saw. I was not believing this at all. I was not, you know, and I'm just staring at her, and tears like are coming down my face. And she, my mentor saw it. She said, what did you see, Ray? And I said, I was a guard. I was one of the emperor's, Caesar's guards. I was on a chariot and I was guarding him and I killed for him. And now I'm a believer that we had a past life together. She described where I was at the same time when I'm seeing the same thing and we're doing separate past life regressions. And I was just completely blown away. That just can't be a coincidence.
That's amazing. And
today, I know there are no coincidences, but
yeah,
then that was very, very shocking in that moment.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a beautiful story. I mean, when you find something that special, that beautiful, you do whatever you can to treasure it, to keep it, to maintain it, to make it even more special. You know, that's just,
we even get around, like if we have fights, I'm like, we could just, you know, separate and I'll just see you in the next life. You know, there's no escape. So,
right. You know, yeah. Yeah.
I'll just see you in the next life. You want to take a break? It's fine.
Well, here's the conundrum now, right? So as you develop and as you make contact with the other side, do you ever wonder if you're becoming a little more enlightened than her and maybe you end up ascending and she's back here in the next life, and maybe you don't see her in the next life?
Well, let's hope that's not the case. Certainly, I share with her everything that I learn, and we, you know, she's very into this. So she's a much better person than I am. So if anybody deserves it, she does more so than I.
Okay.
So, my fingers are crossed for that we're both going to stay together. I think we will.
Do you think? I mean,
First of all, I got to say, I'm not enlightened. I am awakened. I'm still a work in progress.
Sure. Do you think it's possible, or has it been told to you even by this being, that it's possible for you and her to ascend at the same time, or to grow together rather than apart, and to ascend together?
I don't know how to ask those types of questions and get answers. The best I can get with him is yes or no's, based upon the signal that is sent. The communication is very, very difficult. When you first pass on, you go into a realm. Let's just call it the fourth realm. Okay. If this is the third, okay, because this has been coined the third, where you and I are right now on this earth. Let's say the next one is the fourth, right? Mm-hmm. The fourth is not the ultimate place to be. That's not where you're enlightened. The fifth, there you have no body. You're not male or female. I cannot see a face. You're just squiggly lines. And I hear colors. I know it sounds crazy, but I hear colors.
Okay.
And that's a completely different realm. So like her father, for example, is in the fourth. And if I'm communicating with him, who I can communicate better with, my guide, who I call him my guide, he could be on the same movie screen, but her dad can't see him. He can see her dad, but not vice versa, because he's on a higher level. You get it?
Yeah.
So he could be in the picture and he could be, you know, zapping me, and I get a lot of yes or no's and shut up and things like that. Don't, you know, and warnings and just, you know, normal stuff, but I don't get like verbiage from him specifically. Not yet anyway.
Okay.
We'll see if that develops into something more.
Let's talk a little bit about the way you understand things, because you don't call them dimensions, you don't call them planes, you call them just what you call them, realms. And you're talking about the afterlife, and I want to dig a little bit into the afterlife with you here as we're starting to wind things down a little bit today. And again, let's remind people of the two books here, The Atheist and The Afterlife, and You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. We have links in the description of this program so people can go get both books. Ray, here's the deal. We've kind of come to a stereotypical understanding of what we think happens with this whole thing. And especially when we watch television, we watch investigative programs, you get, okay, well, we have earthbound spirits and there's earthbound spirits. And then people go to either the afterlife, you know, you go through the tunnel, you go to the afterlife. So there's what most people would say is the afterlife, heaven, whatever is there. There's earthbound. And then there's other people that believe in hell. So, and then they don't know if it's earthbound or purgatory, or some people believe in this, that, or the other. I want you to tell people what it is that you see and what you believe is there. Coming from someone who believed there was nothing to what is it you see now?
It's a great question. First, I'm going to say that I don't know for sure. Okay, so this is based upon my perceptions, but it's also based on what I think. Because I have no, there are things I have concrete evidence, and I put them in a book. This is definitely not one of them. However, what I do notice is it does appear that when we die, we go to the next realm. It's not necessary. I don't believe it's heaven or hell. It could be either, depending on your karmic energy. I don't think it's a place you go to where you're going to get punished. I think that your karma is going to follow with you into the past life, into the next life, whichever, and the directions that you go until you get it right. So let's say, for example, if you're a terrible person and you hurt people on this earth, when you die, chances are you're going to come back and you're going to be in a worse situation, maybe where there's no food, no water, no nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll start out in a harder place and have to overcome harder things. And it's not until you overcome all these things that you can reach enlightenment, and you'll set yourself back if you hurt your fellow man. Because the thing about this, or woman, I don't want to be sexist, that we are all one. We come from one source, one energy, this consciousness that we possess. And you have it, I have it, everyone has it. We're all connected to this source. Animals, plant life, everything is based upon consciousness. I believe the unifying theory is consciousness. And when we realize that consciousness is nothing more than an energy, the energy being that it creates, there's your God, okay? It's not a person that judges you. It's not a person at all. It's a little piece of all of us, and we come together and we can make the determination as to which way humanity is going to go, in a good direction or a bad. And you know, we're starting to see a lot more good after COVID, which was a horrible thing, right? Something horrible happens and then we perceive things differently and we kind of wake up from that. But you know, for the most part, we were headed in a pretty terrible direction, and a lot would say we're still headed in a terrible direction. Mm-hmm. But collectively, the universal collective consciousness, that collectiveness is God. You're a part of God, and God is a part of you. Jesus told us that. Every religion has a form of that. That is so true. That is how you can manifest things. That is how you can create things, because you are part of the creator. You're co-creator. So that's in this realm, that's in the next realm, that's in the one after that. So it, whatever realm you're in, you're still a part of this energy. Other things might change, your body might go away or it may come back or whatever. But at the end of the day, you're still a part of this energy that is the entire universe. And we all know that there's dark energy that permeates the entire universe. We don't know where it comes from.
Yep.
We don't know why it's there, right? So it could be that. We know that the Higgs field, which is everywhere, determines how particles behave within the Higgs field. And it's not the particle that tells you what it is. It's the field. So if I can alter the field, I can alter the particle. Therefore, I am a creator. And you are too.
Yeah.
Everybody can do this. So I don't know if I've answered your question or got off on a tangent.
No. You have. One of the interesting things, you know, that you bring up in the book that I wanted to throw out to you. You know, when science and religion have this thing where they butt heads, every once in a while they cross and they try to come up with a theory. And interestingly enough, the reason I love your book so much is that you start to answer some questions in your book that satisfy both fields. And you don't have to go too far. It's not like you have to hit yourself over the head in order to answer a lot of this stuff. You know, science comes out a few years ago and says, well, maybe we could answer the afterlife with quantum physics. Maybe the afterlife is really just a quantum field, you know, and then they kind of shrug their shoulders, you know.
But they still like love to hold on to, it's that, you know, it's so decisive. I mean, there are some people that are coming together in the middle now. And I'm trying to, when I write, I try to write in a way that it is practical to make sense to both sides. Yes, there's an afterlife. And yes, it most likely is a quantum field. It is either, you know, when we die, our consciousness is energy, right? And that consciousness, you can call it a spirit or a soul. We all use different terminologies for the same thing. So the first thing that kind of has to happen is we need to develop a vocabulary. What I'm calling consciousness, someone else might call a spirit or a soul. Now, when your body dies, we know that this energy has to go someplace. It has to. How do we know that? Because scientifically, the first law of thermodynamics specifically tells us that all energy cannot be created and cannot cease to exist. It must be recycled into something else.
Yeah.
So our energy has to go someplace. It has to become something else. Then we have this dark energy that Einstein discovered and Hubble solidified as being real that permeates the whole entire universe. It's between you and I. It's between me and Pluto. And, you know, it's everywhere. And we have no idea where that energy comes from. So doesn't it just kind of make sense if you have this energy where you don't know where it goes and you have this other energy where you don't know where it comes from? Couldn't they just be together? And then when people say that the afterlife is actually right here and right now, they're absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's things like that just seem to make sense.
The other thing that hit me right between the eyes in your book was you said that in times of extreme, I don't want to say in times of extreme stress, but in times of difficulty, when you're in times of difficulty psychically, there's someone who comes forward to you and calms you.
Oh, yeah.
And who is that person?
Oh, well, are we talking about my guide? Oh, my God. Now I know who you're talking about. I'm sorry. All right.
Someone who science doesn't, may or may not believe even existed.
Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. There's a chapter in the book that says Jesus never speaks.
Yeah.
I am a huge, huge fan of Jesus and Buddha and many of the other great beings that have walked this earth. And when I was seeing some really horrendous things in the early beginnings of my quote unquote psychic ability, I saw murders. I saw just terrible things being done by people to children. And it was just very, very bad. And I I wanted this to go away. I just said, please make this stop. I don't want this. This is not a blessing. This is a curse. I don't want it. I want it off me. I have to make it stop. I even called my mentor and I said, please, you got to tell me how to turn this off forever. And she goes, give it 2 weeks. And if you still feel the same way, I'll tell you how to do it. I don't know if there really is a way or not, because we never had that conversation. And what happened was, it was night. I was in bed and I was seeing some really horrible things again. And I said what I said. I said, just make this go away. And a presence entered the room that was unlike any other presence that I've ever experienced in my life. It was not like when I see my wife's dad or my guide or anybody for that matter. This presence was, I could not look directly into it was like an eclipse, and I couldn't really look, even though I'm seeing nothing with my eyes. I can't open my eyes in my movie screen, and I can't see, and it's so powerful that it made me fall to the floor. It literally knocked me over, and the presence comes, and with this, and saying not a word, I just know that what was said, I'll take this from you. And he took it all away. How do I know it's Jesus? I have no idea. I just know. And that's why it's in the, Jesus never speaks. He comes, it's a millisecond that he's there. And he just takes the problem. You're not ready for this yet. And he takes it away. Mm-hmm. And it was gone. Mm-hmm. And it restored my faith. And I was okay with moving forward.
Yeah. I still maintain, and to a lot of people who, and again, you know, we may even have some, we do have atheists that listen to the show. I do get the emails from some people who say, I don't believe in a lot of what you broadcast, but I listen to it for entertainment's sake. That they'll listen and go, I still don't believe, but it's interesting what you say. Unless you feel or the power of a massive amount of people who pray for you and you see yourself heal from that power of prayer, unless you feel a presence in a room and know that something has happened, you'll never know that feeling of that entity when it comes in. And you, I was just impressed by that chapter. So
I think that if you put it in a context, remember, Jesus wasn't a Christian. Buddha was not a Buddhist.
Right.
Take these men out of that context and look at them as divine beings who did great things on this earth. And just allow there to be an afterlife where they are granted powers or insight or whatever it is that you want to call it, the ability to help others. Take the rest of it because it's not necessary, and you will feel differently. If you listen to Eckhart Tolle speak about Jesus's teachings, they're very different from Christianity, and you might align with them a lot more than the way it's in the Bible. Remember, the Bible was edited by Constantine, right? He assembled scholars. He was not a Christian himself. He assembled a bunch of scholars, decided what stayed, what didn't stay, and the book was edited.
Yeah.
So, but if you get the original teachings of Christ, he never said he was the Son of God. He said, we were all sons of God. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying to you.
Yeah.
We're all co-creators. Yeah. We are all one. That's what he's trying to teach. He's not saying I'm special, I'm separate, I'm more than you. He's saying we're all the same. You can do everything that I can do. And we can change things for the better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, yeah. So with that, I want to end on this. Now, you yourself teach people how they can move forward in their life, how they can be limitless. So with that, you have a book out there called You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. You teach people, Ray, how they can be limitless. Tell us in just kind of a blush here, how people can move forward in their life. Because there's people in this audience right now who are thinking, Ray, you know what? I live my life. I trudge through my life. I do what I can do. But, you know, I do what I can do. I'm nothing special. How can someone move from their everyday life to being limitless?
Okay, so everyone is special. Okay, everyone is a part of this oneness. We are all part of this collective consciousness. Being limitless is being at peace with all aspects of a healthy life. Remaining steadfast in the journey to challenge, explore, and expand their mind, contribute positively to society and their life, and move forward without fear and without doubt. And just experience life on a level of knowing that things are going to go the way you want them to, as long as you perceive them that they will go the way you want them to. Remember, I could perceive that car accident, which was terrible, but I could also perceive a path where I've got a wife and a great job and two healthy kids and everything that I could possibly ask for. So it's in within yourself, that peace, that calm, that's inside of you. Don't look outside. Don't look for someone else to come to your rescue. It's within you. It's already there. You've got the tools. So what I do is I help people find those tools and bring them out and utilize them each day to improve their lives each day. And then when they get it, they've got it and they don't need me anymore. And that's the objective, not to be a coach forever, just to coach you for as long as you need me. Now you've got the tools. Now you show somebody else just the way I was taught. You should take it and give it to someone else.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Is part of that, and this is one of the last questions here, is part of that to stop looking at your neighbor and going, I wish they had what they had?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah. Materialism has got to be one of the first things that goes. surrendering, oh my God, I don't even know where to start with the materialism. It's, I learned, I'll tell you the story really quick.
Sure.
When I knew I had a spiritual awakening, and the biggest one for me was when I lost my negative emotions. Okay. My go-to emotion would always be anger, because that's what I was brought up with. So it was always anger. So if I was sad, I was angry. If I was angry, I was angry. If I had anxiety, I was angry. All reduced to anger all the time. I was driving a very expensive car because I thought that was a big deal at the time. And mm-hmm. I still had this car, but I was with my wife now. We weren't married yet. We still had two different homes, and I was driving from hers to mine, and it was snowing. It was going to be a blizzard that night. So I was trying to get a jump on it. And although I was driving slow, the snow just started to come down really, really heavy. And I drove my car into a deer, or the deer ran into the car. I don't know however you want to look at it. And normally what would have happened is my adrenaline would have surged, and I would have been so irate with the situation. How could this happen? Oh, this could only happen to me. Just my luck, blah, 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 blah. Okay, none of that occurred. None of that occurred. In fact, I was calm, and the only thing I cared about was the deer. And I got out of the car, and I went to see if the deer was okay, and the deer got up. And then I checked to see if I was okay, and I was okay. The deer walked off, and I went back to the car. The car was destroyed. So what? It was a piece of tin that I thought was a big deal because my father thought it was a big deal to have an expensive car. It's not. What's important is that life was spared, my life was spared, and that I wasn't upset about it. So I was able to drive the car to the body shop, and I parked it, and I Ubered home, and I went right to sleep, and I didn't lose any sleep over it. I no longer cared about things that don't matter. I didn't get upset about things that don't matter anymore. 90% of the things that we think about is like, oh my God, what does that person think of me when I said this? Who cares? what you think of me is none of my business, because you've just got to surrender to what is and keep moving forward. Don't worry about the car. Worry about your health and the health of the people that you love. Worry about helping other people achieve the things that you can achieve, and stop worrying about keeping up with the Joneses, or worrying about who's thinking what about you and who said what and this one did that, and turn the news off because it's only going to make things worse. It's designed to make you more angry. So you put this into a practice of surrendering to the things that you cannot change. And when you master the art of surrender, you will be in a place where you don't care about a lot of things that you used to care about, and you'll find how free you now are. It's not everything. I mean, I'm not telling you to be carefree with every single thing in the world,
sure,
right? But
sure,
there's so many things that we can let go of that we just allow to brew, and we think about them, and we think that's your ego, and it's talking and talking and talking. And when you finally realize that that ego is not you, it's just a construct of your makeup, all your past experiences, everybody from the age of maybe 2 to 7 or 10 years of age, all that is stored, and it creates the narrator that's in your mind. And that's what we call the egoic mind. Mm-hmm. And when you can realize that you're not your ego, but you're actually your awareness, which is at the highest level of consciousness, Eckhart Tolle calls it the awareness. Other people have other words for it, but it's because you're aware that you're having a thought or you're having an emotion. Therefore, you should be able to control them if you don't wish to have them. You may experience them, but don't take possession of them.
Yeah.
Don't let it brew for a whole day, and don't tell other people so that it ruins their day. I didn't call anybody to tell them about my car. I just went home and went to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't go back in time. I can't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a car.
That's incredibly healthy. Incredibly healthy, Ray. I don't know any other way to put it, but yeah, incredibly healthy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. It just, if more people thought the way you thought, we'd be a functional society instead of dysfunctional.
I really appreciate you saying that, because I never would have said that about myself.
Well, it's true. It's very much true. The two books are available right now. We've got links to them. The Atheist in the Afterlife, You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. Our guest, Ray Catania. I want to thank you so much, Ray, for joining us, enlightening us today, and a very good show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a privilege and an honor. Thank you so much.
The honor is all ours, my friend, and hope you'll join us again.
I'd love to.
Thank you. Want to thank my guest today, Ray Catania, for being on the program. The books are The Atheist in the Afterlife and You Are Still Alive, Now Act Like It. Ray's books are going to open your eyes, folks. He's not your typical psychic medium, and I'll tell you this much, he's got a totally different outlook on the afterlife. And I'm telling you, you want to pick up these books, you want to read them. And not only will you be entertained, but there's a lot of information there as well. You'll be educated, and you'll get a little different spin on the psychic world. And it'll make you think, too. If you're an atheist, especially, if you're an atheist, if you're agnostic, if you're on the fence, if you think about the world as lonely, cold, there's nothing after this, or maybe you're exploring and thinking maybe there's something out there, but you're very, very skeptical, maybe even a little cynical, pick up Ray's book and think twice. Because he was totally an atheist before this whole journey, and you could tell, just me sitting here on Zoom with him, looking into his eyes, you could tell that that's a man who's done a complete 180, that he's a changed man. And it's exciting to see, I tell you, to see a man who's got not only a gift, but man, has he got a sharp gift. I mean, this is a guy who not only is communicating with the dead, but he's reading live minds as well, and telling, being able to sit across from somebody and tell if they're deceptive, or being able to tell exact things about them that are going on in their lives. and being able to judge character as he's sitting across from people and doing it accurately. So we didn't even get to that part of his gift. Tell you what, we're going to have him back on a future program. We're going to talk about character development and talking about how to develop your own self. And then we'll also get into other parts of his gifts as well. We'll do that in a future episode. Coming up on the weekend, folks, and it's daylight savings time this weekend. So remember, turn your clock forward for we're springing ahead this weekend. I know you guys, some of you guys out there are looking forward to having the extra daylight. I know I am. And I know when we spring ahead, we're looking forward to chipmunk season. So I'm excited. I'm getting that close to or that much closer to having my buddies back. So that's good. I'm looking forward to that. I want to also continue the upbeat mood here. And I want to say a special congratulations as we wind up the program here today. I want to say congratulations to my buddy Katrina Weidman and her husband. She came out on social media this week and announced that she's pregnant and that they're trying to decide on a name for the new little one. And it just does my heart happy. You know, a long time ago, in a very, very private conversation, I'll choose to keep that conversation private. Katrina and I talked in Virginia City. And at that time, I'll just put it this way. She had, let's just say she had put out the intention that she someday wanted her own. She wanted her own children. And I'm so proud. My heart is so full to see that my buddy Katrina is now with child. It just makes me so happy. I'm just so happy for you, Katrina. I just want to put it out there in a public forum and let you know that I'm so happy for you and your husband. And I hope that I get to see pictures of the little one when the little one is here. I hope that the name comes to you and your child has such an affable, lovable spirit and that the three of you are so happy. And that Batman's happy too, their puppy, because Batman is an important part of the family as well. So congratulations to the three of you and that fourth family member that's coming. I know that you guys are going to have a happy family for such a very long time. And I'm so very, very proud of you guys. I love you guys and so very happy for you guys and your family. So there you go. Heading into the weekend as well, just going to remind you again, like I do every week, be a light in someone's darkness. Go out there and help somebody, whether it be a friend, a neighbor, a member of the family, whatever it is. Go out and make somebody's weekend this weekend, folks. You don't have to do much. Maybe you contribute a little something to a charitable organization. Maybe you help a neighbor with a chore. Maybe you help a family member move something. Doesn't take much. Just be a presence. Maybe somebody's feeling down. Give them a phone call. Give them a little note, you know, or even stop by and just say, hey, take them out for a meal. Just do something to bring up somebody's spirits. Maybe it's just dropping them a communique via this technology we have that seems to be failing, especially if you're on Facebook this week. maybe it's just a little something to brighten somebody's day. You know, like Ray was saying during the program, it seems like we were getting into a divide with our society where we were starting to push away from each other. We need to band together more than ever these days, and we need to get closer to each other. That's what makes us special. That's what makes us human beings. And we need to be more of that. We need to be more together. So that's the only way we function, is by being together. The more separation we put between ourselves, the more we fall apart. And as society falls apart, so do we. So let's get out there and be together. Let's do that, shall we? And that's all I got to say. I'm off my soapbox now. Have a great weekend, everybody. We got a huge week of shows next week. We're going to have a great week next week. Tune in next week with True Crime Tuesday, of course, Supernatural News. And then, boy, have I got an interview lined up for you next Thursday. So just put it that way. Great week of shows next week. We'll see you next week for the best in true crime and paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio.